diálogo multisectorial donde no se impongan posiciones unilaterales. Así lo subrayó este miércoles el relator de la ONU sobre la libertad de opinión y expresión, Frank Larue, en un comunicado referido a las conclusiones de la Conferencia Internacional de Telecomunicaciones celebrada en Dubái. El relator pidió que las futuras conferencias de ese tipo incluyan a representantes de otras organizaciones internacionales, así como a entidades de derechos humanos del sector privado, incluidos proveedores de Internet y organizaciones civiles. Larue indicó que ese medio expande la capacidad de los individuos de disfrutar de la libertad de expresión, por lo que las discusiones sobre sus reglamentaciones tienen que tener una base firme de respeto a los derechos humanos. Rocío Franco, Nueva York.
Y aquí concluye esta edición del informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
And next up on Free Radio, it's Bathurst Spears Broadsides, a review of the Homeless Memorial, the reading of the names of the dead that happened today out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. Stay tuned.
And here she is now, the hottest woman to ever govern the coldest state, Sarah Palin!
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, Barack Obama.
Hello. As you know, my administration has been taking a bit of a beating lately, and one of these reasons is the fallout from the crisis in the Gulf of Mexico. It could be this nation's worst and ugliest beach disaster since Larry King went sunbathing in a Speedo. Now, of course, I'm referring to the BP oil spill, and quite frankly, this whole situation has made me very angry. Sorry for that outburst. Now, we do have some good news with the plugging of the leak, but there is still a massive amount of oil to be cleaned up. So we have been brainstorming ideas, and my administration believes we have come up with a couple of possible solutions. First, I have been in touch with the guy who sells ShamWows. And he is willing to give us 300 million ShamWow towels absolutely free. We just pay $1.9 billion in shipping and handling. And if we call in the next 5 minutes, he will double our order. Also, if the capping of the well is unsuccessful, we can always plug the underwater leak with the bonus checks of BP executives, or with the executives themselves. Yes, we can. Now, I've heard some comments recently to the effect of perhaps I spend too much time on the road and not enough time at the White House. But I will remind you all that I live with my mother-in-law. And as I mentioned earlier, we do have midterm elections coming up, and Democrats are worried. The only poll most of them want to see is a 10-foot one to keep me away from them on the campaign trail. But I believe we can turn this economy around. And I believe that because that's what it says on my teleprompter. I'll admit that times are trying. Housing slumps and rising debts. Though it's tough, there's no denying, you won't see me sweat. What kind of cool am I? Though budgets are a wreck, yet I won't swear as I move chairs on the Titanic's deck. What kind of plan is this? New polls have shown the jobs that Democrats must save are now their own. Majorities will save with a new spending wave, or the next shovel-ready project could be our own grave. Keep Democrats in charge if you like things so far, and maybe then we'll know what kind of fools you are.
Good evening, Americans. I'm Tony Hayward of British Petroleum. Now then, as you... Oh, blast. Seemed to have had a little spill. Oh, well, I'm sure it will clean itself up nicely. Now then, as you may have heard, we had the teeniest of kerfuffles when it comes to extracting oil from your Gulf. And many of you Americans, with your faulty understanding of the term football and your annoyingly straight teeth, seem to think that I should have cut short my weekend with my son on our 52-foot yacht, which is the smaller of our yachts. We usually reserve that one to bring scones and crumpets to the even larger yacht.
And we'll leave the BP executive to his chatter. Actually, it's a satire from Desperate House Members, and I think actually some of you may have heard that on my last show. You are tuned to 101.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norse. And this is Bathrob Spears, Broadsides. I should be with you now for 2 hours or so, maybe a little longer, because I think Uncle Dennis is on vacation, and I may be stealing a little of his time. Although I'll be playing one of his older shows, probably one you've heard numerous times before if you're a longtime listener, but he's got some good stuff on his shows, if you like that kind of music, which I often do. So that's going to be from the cream to the dregs after my show. But again, It isn't going to be a new show unless something untoward or unusual happens, in which case, well, hopefully I'll hear about it first and let you know about it. Also happening tonight on this show, which tends to focus on civil rights in Santa Cruz, or the search for civil rights in Santa Cruz, there's going to be, as I hear, a dance the frost off, to coin a phrase, a dance happening on Pacific Avenue at 9 o'clock in front of New Leaf Market. This is pretty sure, I kind of got the word on this and want to pass it along. There's also a rumor there's going to be hot soup from Joe Schultz's tasty India Joe's restaurant to fortify people against police raids, pneumonia, and, of course, just the cold of the Santa Cruz winter, both the outer cold and the spiritual cold that unfortunately seems to be hitting this winter. It's too bad I don't have much of a recording of the event that happened on Monday, this last Monday, the Public Safety Committee meeting, where we had a packed room full of people. I don't want to say howling for homeless blood. That's not really accurate. But the focus, first we had a variety of bureaucrats commending themselves from the police chief on down about what wonderful things they had done and were doing, and they were going to take care of all the problems of recently lots of needles were discovered, relatively small number actually compared to the number found every year by or turned in every year to needle exchange, but a significant number to cause some concern and to raise waves in the media, and also to galvanize volunteers to go out and clean up beaches, clean up Cowles Beach, clean up the riverbanks and the Poganip, the railroad tracks, with the clean team, which got a lot of volunteers and was out there separating itself from Take Back Santa Cruz, a group that has done this occasionally, mainly as a kind of a looked like a publicity building. We're fighting crime, and by crime they meant lurkers in the bushes who are homeless in their illegal camps, who are panhandling and driving down the quality of life. Plus, real crime, burglaries, the not terribly frequent killings. I think we've had two this year, maybe more, maybe three or four. Again, though, with a focus on a kind of collusion with the police around, this is my impression, scapegoating homeless people. So there was this meeting Monday, which we weren't able to get a recording of because the council member who is responsible for that ducked that responsibility, David Chirazes. Staff member for the Public Safety Committee declined to do it. And Chirazes gave some mealy-mouthed excuse to me about, oh, it isn't normally done. Although a meeting with more than 100 people crammed into the room that lasted 4 hours was certainly worthy of being recorded. And I tried to get some of it, but I was due at another meeting, and my equipment was primitive, and I didn't get much of it. However, what I did today was went out to the Homeless Lack of Services Center, or the Homeless Services Center, as they call themselves, out at 115 Coral Street, and recorded the, I think it's the 14th Homeless Memorial, the reading of the names of the homeless who've died this year, homeless from Santa Cruz or homeless who left Santa Cruz were primarily from Santa Cruz or people who finally came in out of the cold and got some services at the very end of their lives, yet most of their lives were homeless here in Santa Cruz or for a significant period of time. And I'm going to play that for you now and encourage you to call in if you have your own thoughts on this. I want to warn you in advance, this is not a reverential approach to how the Homeless Lack of Services Center proceeds. It is a critical, somewhat caustic approach. I have to say that I didn't know most of the homeless people who died this last year. I knew a few. Michael Tomasi, Robert Facer. But they were also, in their own way, activists. And they actually weren't even listed in the Homeless Lack of Services Center's list of the dead. But there were those who were concerned and cared about those folks who had died, and I do have a few testimonials from them. I invite you to call in and give your thoughts about folks who've gone. My main concern has always been to see something that stops this from happening next year. I find it, again, a rather upsetting that we have these pious statements once a year and then behaviors and practices and rules the other 364 days that encourage exactly the same result or worse the next year. That is to say, lack of shelter, criminalization of the poor in public spaces, lack of drug rehabilitation services for people who want them, criminalization of people who use drugs or sell drugs for that matter. All this, which is a pointless, endless spiral, and police solutions to medical problems. Most important, the demonization of homeless people, or the indication that there is a good group of homeless people and the bad group of homeless people. This is what is being pushed by people like Annalisa Cube of Take Back Santa Cruz, and is my understanding. She was given 10 minutes to speak at this aforementioned Public Safety Committee meeting on Monday. Everybody else got 2 minutes, as I heard it. I wasn't able to hear her speak. I just saw a reference to it in the Santa Cruz Sentinel 2 days later and heard about it from activist Steve Plaich, who apparently did stay through the whole meeting. Anyway, let's hear, however, from... You're going to hear me, essentially, giving a long commentary, and there'll be some interviews. I describe what's happening at the Homeless Lack of Service Center Memorial. It started at 10 o'clock this morning and lasted for a couple hours. And I try to give you a kind of a bird's eye view, or in this case, perhaps a bird's ears view. Memorial service coming up on the 20th of December. They mourn one day, and they criminalize the other 364. It's interesting. With me is that man about bagels.
One fine day.
And one fine day, what do you think of this service? This is not your first service, right?
It is. This is the first time I've made the time. So this is the one day I'm...
Why did you decide to come?
Community. This is good community of feeds me, keeps me whole. Here, here.
And I don't know if this person wants her or his, in this case, his name to be revealed, but he's a regular participant in serving food at the Red Church, Calvary Episcopal Church, every Monday, where there is a hot meal and lots of bagels with cream cheese and other spreads. 5 to 7, come and get it.
Well, we'll see how that goes. Maybe I'll have the same experience. So I'm looking here at the Homeless Service Center rules posted on the door of 115D, the first office you come to as you walk onto the property. There's rules about parking, only drivable vehicles, no campers or RVs with current registration tags are allowed to be on the Homeless Service Center campus, and only while its occupants are on the Homeless Service Center campus using Homeless Service Center services. Vehicles must accompany only one parking space that is not designated as reserved or restricted. Hi, Matt. And loitering and sleeping in any vehicle is not permitted on the Homeless Service Center campus. Vehicle maintenance must be done off the Homeless Service Center campus. Vehicles found violation will be towed at the owner or driver's expense. Radios and other players. Headphones must be worn to listen to radios and other players. If other people can hear your radio, then it is too loud. Repairs. Mechanical repairs, such as on bicycles or vehicles, are not permitted on the HSC campus. Sales. Selling, promoting, and advertising products, whether legal or illegal, is not permitted on the HSC campus. Sexual activity. Sexual activity of any kind, even by married couples, is prohibited on the HSC campus. And sexual advances toward residents and our staff may be considered sexual harassment and therefore is also prohibited. Smoking. Smoking is only permitted in the HSC smoking gazebo located in front of the Hygiene Bay area. Smoking in front of HSC buildings, HBHB Day Service Center, Hygiene Bay mailroom, or surrounding businesses in the area is also prohibited. Speed limit, 5 miles per hour. Stealing or vandalism, not permitted. Taking something that does not belong to you is stealing, and damaging or defacing property is vandalism. It may result in being exited. Trash compactor area. Only authorized participants and staff are allowed to dump suitable waste and recyclables. Unauthorized dumping is prohibited and may be cause for being banned. Telephone is for local calls only. Clients are allowed to make one call that will not exceed 5 minutes. Clients are not permitted to use HSC office phones, will be denied access when asked. Weapons, knives, guns are not allowed. And there's a no impact zones map. Help the Homeless Service Center be good neighbors. Prevent funding loss and closure. Keep the no impact zones around the Homeless Service Center, which extends from Fern Street, looks like, to no loitering on Coral Street. Includes a large area, no camping on the railroad tracks, no panhandling at Highway 1 and River Street. Includes loitering, camping, and abandoned cameras, drug and alcohol use, littering, shopping carts, panhandling, and jaywalking.
And just a comment about these rules. There's no mention of the can't be on the campus from 10 to 3, which I think is the case. That's what I hear from everybody I talk to. And when I talk to staff afterward, I got the same, I got no denials as when I mentioned that was what I understood. So it means that during the day, homeless people are banned from the Homeless Lack of Services Center unless they're engaged in business like washing their clothes or picking up mail or some sort of, application forms or class of some kind, if there is a class happening and, or some kind of an event going on, as there was today, which was this memorial service. This is in violation to what used to be the practices at the Homeless Community Resource Center, the group that preceded the organization and facility that preceded the Homeless Services Center in 1992 through 1998 or so. And most of the time during the Homeless Lack of Services Center or Homeless Services Center life, homeless people were allowed there until it was changed, I think about 2005, I think, something like that. And it was changed back when Doug Loisel became executive director, again allowing people there during the day. And then again changed back again when he was summarily dumped and pressed to resign. It was done, as I mentioned, as I understand it, for the convenience of the staff rather than for anything else. When I asked the staff about it afterward, they didn't know, the three staff members I talked to, Shelley Kittredge, a woman named Christine, and a guy called Jeffrey. And they didn't know why that was the case, and they kind of wondered if it wasn't because they had to clean up the property. And I said, it takes 5 hours to mop the floor. I mean, it wasn't very persuasive. And they admitted they weren't sure about what was going on, but it seemed to be peculiar that the so-called Homeless Services Center is doing the kind of exclusionary behavior that is now becoming de rigueur and standard all over town in terms of curfew zones, no trespass at night zones. This is actually a no trespass in the day zone for people who are just simply want to rest. Now, it is true I talked to some disabled folks, and they are allowing disabled people to spend time there during the day, which is good. But, this was originally set up for, I would think, everybody. Anyway, that's one concern I have. Another concern, and actually I want to say some positive things. There apparently is no threat of people being kicked out if they are caught loitering outside the homeless lack of services center in the so-called no-impact zones. But I didn't really determine if that was the unwritten policy. It's not the written policy. Nor is there a written policy to call the police if people are take items for do can collecting in that area, which seems to be city policy in other parts of the town. But again, I don't know what the actual practices are of the homeless lack of services center. If you want to call in, if you have some thoughts you want to add, and again, this is all pretty much going to be about the Homeless Memorial Service, at least the first part of the show, feel free to do so. The phone number here is 427-3772. 427-3772. And I'll be here waiting for your calls. I've got a little... I'll be waiting for your calls, provided the phone lines are available. It looks like one of them has been blocked off, but is no longer blocked off. So actually, there's a second line, too, 469-3119, in case you can't get through at 427-3772. But usually that line is woefully open and available, 427-3772. Let's hear some more from earlier today at the Homeless Lack of Services Center.
There's no admonition that you're going to be expelled for those things.
The 180 most likely to die in our community while homeless. And I think folks who did die too soon, we can know that while we're going to pray today for those who have passed away, we're going to fight like hell for those that are still alive and to make change so that way not as many people face the same fate.
So it looks like about 36 homeless dead as represented by the flags. And Monica Martinez just finished her spiel about the 180-180 program. We have Bill Monig's office.
180-180 program, for those who don't know, is sort of the latest. Ignore the real shelter and housing crisis and focus on generating support among financial sources, mostly private, perhaps some government sources, for getting the most vulnerable but also the most costly homeless people off the streets. People who have serious drug and alcohol problems that sprawl in public in ways that embarrass the merchants and also cause a lot of emergency room problems and so forth. And I've been rather cynical about this, though I think it's fine for that group of people in terms of giving them housing first. That's the idea. And I tried to find out more about this later, as you'll hear in the tape from the 180-180 lead guy, Phil Kramer, who was also at this service. He refused to say anything. I think he may be catching on that I'm not his biggest supporter on this issue, though I support the program insofar as, it helps a certain group of people. But insofar as it serves as a replacement and a siphoning off of energy toward broader decriminalization of the homeless while this great housing search goes on. Why there's a great housing search when there's so much vacant housing is completely ridiculous. It's people unwilling to face the need to address the income disparities in the country and instead, want to spend their time panhandling merchants, pampering the police, and continuing to fund middle-class jobs with the illusion that they're helping a broad segment of the homeless community, which I don't think they are in the most basic way. Not to say that some services there aren't good, and you're going to hear some real praise from some homeless folks who really appreciate the services there. And when you're desperate, you certainly do appreciate them when you get them, insofar as you get them. But the real question for me is, how are the resources being used? How many people, what percentage of the community that is homeless is really being served? And I'm actually finding as I listen to this tape that Monica Martinez, and that was the voice you heard saying that she's going to fight like hell, you can actually hear her, but it was hard for me to know that that was actually the case on this very small recorder I'm using. Usually it's not so audible. But there was a lot of media there, and I believe there'll be some other record of her and the speeches of others, which to me are not as important as small interviews with people who are actually homeless and who actually lost people they knew. I didn't light a candle for anybody myself. I didn't give a speech. I don't really have an emotional link with almost all the people who died there last year. And that's just a fact. And I think it's hypocritical for me to pretend otherwise. But I am concerned that this not happen again next year, if possible. And that's the motivation for the kind of comments I'm making.
Guy speaking.
So a rep from Bill Monig's office presents a plaque giving this recognition as Homeless Memorial Day. Of course, 647E, which he helped to intensify the anti-homeless lodging law, is not being discussed, or the Homeless Bill of Rights.
And again, this is a bureaucrat, a representative of, or political representative of, I guess, is he Assemblyman Bill Monig, or has he graduated to the Senate? I'm not sure, but he's a politician who supported the bill to double the amount of fine and time that those convicted of 647E, the Thou Shalt Not Lodge ordinance, got, are now going to get. And as such, whatever his other liberal activity, which shouldn't be ignored, he's not someone that I particularly feel like celebrating. But when he gives a little, you know, once a year plaque dedicating this as Homeless Memorial Day, but I'm not aware he's come out in favor of the Homeless Bill of Rights, which I have some doubts about its possible effectiveness, but it certainly attempts to be a step in the right direction. I've talked about it in past shows, and I'll talk about it again as it wends its way through the legislature and gets, no doubt, increasingly neutered and castrated and generally weakened. But let's continue listening. This is Monig's representative is one on a variety of speakers.
I'm honored to reflect and share. This is the second year that I've done this. And, of course, I reflect from my own life.
It's Father Joel Miller from the Calvary Episcopal Church. Second year he's done it. You can't really hear him speaking, so I'm going to just simply summarize. About 75 or 80 people in the room, including the chief of police, Steve Plage, a couple of Huff members, Becky Johnson, Paul Lee, a few others I recognize, and no one from the city council that I recognize yet. I don't recognize the names of any of the homeless folks that are written on the flags that adorn the wall behind Joel Miller, who's speaking. I don't know how many of these people died in jail from mistreatment or the fact that the jail services have been turned over to private medical corporation. Though that has been the accusation of a couple of people at the Huff meeting, and also I think that there's a third or fourth person who died this year was headlined in the Sentinel or maybe backpaged in the Sentinel.
That's died in jail of an overdose, I believe it was, or insufficient, and is the inability of the jail to handle coming down off of some medication. I believe that was the most recent death. It might have been three this year, but I think it was four. I tried to get more information from Sentinel writer Stephen Baxter. He didn't have information from past years to compare whether there was any basis for suggesting that the deterioration in the recent deaths may be a symptom of deterioration of medical care there, particularly given the new pressure put on local jails because Governor Brown wants to save money in the prison system and also has to respond to the wretched medical conditions that federal courts have found are prevailing in the state jails because of this huge incarceration business that is going on. You know, I don't have any stats on what percentage of the jails are private these days. I should probably get some expert on the air to talk about that. And I don't know how significant that is in the deterioration of services. I've never been a big fan of prison management myself, or a person who's well informed on that. Anyway, the word jail I don't think came up much in this homeless memorial, though it is, I think, a daily part of the life of a lot of homeless people who face the threat of it or the experience of it for essentially innocent, life-sustaining behavior in Santa Cruz, whether it's sleeping or sitting down or recycling cans, taking a crap when the bathrooms are closed, you name it.
And Joel's talking about remembering and celebrating Joel Miller, the pastor. I notice most of the ages of the homeless that are also included on the banners that are outside here, as well as inside. Stephen Chase, Robert Sullivan, Christopher Gauthier, Tim McGrath, there's a name I know, Jack Richard, William Gemson, Steve Bowers, Brian Loveland, Christina Walt.
As you'll hear in a moment, these are actually the names of people who've died in the last 13 years or 12 years. They were all written on banners and kind of festooned the area outside the dining hall area where the speakers were speaking and folks were listening to the memorial service. And inside that smaller room, there were flags with the names of homeless people and their age at death on the wall behind the speaker.
Balls. Jan Damkeller, Carol Cranston, William Reardon, and I'm going to start reading the ages too. William Reardon is 45, Ken Mason was 47, Jason Vase was 25, Victor Barbie 47, Damian Carter 21, Stephen Ellis 43, James Greenbaum 45, Stephen Owensky 44, Jeremy Michael Dodd 26, Gary Chester 47, Sandra Russell 55, Kalen Frith 23, James Small 48, Donald Schwab 31, Mike Cassidy 31, Claude Gisriel, 49, Larry Kiske, 50, Chris Wickman, 48, Michael Richards, 44, Marie Susie Castro, 47, Ralph Svensson, 64, Ray Stitt, 54, I think I knew Ray. Richard Martinez, 45. Robert Hall, 48. I knew Robert Hall. Stephen, is it Corho? Hard to read. And these are actually the names of all kinds of people who died in earlier years. This is from 1999. All these names I'm reading are not the names of the people who died this year. These flags are containing the names of people who died in previous years, and they're all arrayed outside the hall. Some from 2010, some from 19, all the way back to the very beginning of these flags to, I guess 1999 is when this starts, and there's quite a number of them all along the wall, all along the posts outside the homeless service center bays. They run the whole length of the bays. So we're hearing a hallelujah song now from Joel Miller. And I'm just wondering if he actually knew any of these people who died. I don't. The ones I mentioned that I knew are from earlier deaths, from earlier years, that I recognize as I walk along. I'd like to get a list of all these folks. And perhaps, obviously such a list exists, so maybe I can get it at some point. The Sippus, 2003. I'm looking for names of people that I actually remember.
Patches, 54. Melinda Ann Nielsen died in 2003. Robert Wagner, 2004, 58. I think that was a fellow who froze to death on the steps of City Hall. Patches was harassed by police for, having a shopping cart in the New Leaf parking lot or some such thing. And there's Mike Seymour, defended him in his vehicle. Ashorty's brother died this year. He's a street spirit vendor. I'm sure there are people I'm overlooking. John Waddell, John Earth, 64, died in 2008. I may have known Richard Barrett, 56, died in 2008. There was a Barrett who ran for city council in the 70s who I ran into, and maybe it was the 80s, and I came through Santa Cruz. Some of these names are not properly placed. I have to kind of walk about the vegetation to see them. But at least they're here for the first time that I've noticed this year. They may have been here last year because I wasn't at last year's memorial. Very few people in their 70s. Not many in their 60s, mostly 50s and 40s. Did I know Linda Romero, 62, died in 2010? I do not remember. Linda Abel, I think I knew her. 61, 2010, she was a Huff member. Romali Spires, 49, died in 2010, rings a bell. Michael Phelps, 1999, died at the age of 39. Bob Hall, died in 1999, 48. It's got to be another Robert Hall. The Robert Hall I knew was older. Unless he aged very rapidly, I don't think so. Hall was a local community activist. And we now have someone reading the death locations of all the folks. It's another first, and moving, actually. I'm not quite sure who's reading this list, but hopefully it'll be available for the public to look at later. I'm continuing to look now outside at the names of the folks who are up on these pennants or flags saying from 1999 to 2012 the people who died either outside homeless or were largely homeless and maybe have died inside at the end. Really hard to read those blue pennants. In the past, these ceremonies have been held outdoors. Perhaps that was before the dining bay opened up. And we're going to take a brief correctional break. Let's have a little, hang in there. I'll be right back. I also see former mayor and current council member reelected at the last election, Don Lane, in the audience, the only council member I recognize. I don't know if there's any mention of the fact that encampments broken up have meant more homeless deaths or any discussion of the number of people displaced by the Santa Cruz Police Department's Kevin Vogel, who's standing in the back in full uniform. That would be interesting, but of course it might detract from the solemnity of the token mourning ceremony here. And I say token because it's all very well to have a memorial once a year, and unless you, however, take the steps to address these shelter issues, which the Homeless Lack of Services Center has never done and has no indication that they will be doing it, it is a form of either blindness or hypocrisy, perhaps both. And that was Matthew, who Joel Miller describes as a public nurse, speaking about the deaths of two people he knew, as well as giving the death locations of different folks. And the person who helped put up all the flags.
Death locations, meaning died in their camp, died in the hospital, and so forth. Matt of the Homeless Persons Health Project did send me a list of the names of people who did die in the last year, the ones that they actually tallied. There were some they didn't. As I mentioned before, Robert Facer and Michael Tomasi were two of those, and you'll hear some further discussion of that. I'm going to read the names of these people and their ages. And here we go. Charlotte Hunter, 60. Michael Ellis, 43. Joseph Lopez, 61. Rudy Kobus, 54. John Payne, 53. Vicki Adams, 51. Mardessa Burns Fierro, 32. William Fields, 49. Antone John Souza, 43. Ethan Somedy, 47. Eden Bresnahan, 35. Michael Gaffey, 59. Sherry Rosa, 50. Wallace Clock, 59. Peter Birmingham, 55. Christopher Collins, 29. Francisco Flores, 54. Denise Davey, 58. Michael Beard, 54. Christy Sanders, 27. Jose Saavedra, 80. And that's rare. William Jones, 67. Stephen Machado, 58. Valerie Fielding, 57. David Rogers, 51. Hugh Clayton Montgomery, 60. Warren Moore, Jr., 66. James Logan, 54. Raymond Prabula, 52. Roger Golden, 51. Charles Powers, 51. Brant Monette, 47. Kristen Deward, 47. Paul Doering, 55. Gail Arbuckle, 63. Lev Pogrebinski, 43. Michael Tomasi, he is on this list, I beg your pardon, 63. Thomas Swanson, 49. Mary Lawrence, 61. William Morris, 79. Debbie Wilson, 57. Frank Burt, 60. William Reed, 60. Lester Kazmierczak, 61. Roy Hughes, 50. And Xenia Zenon, 65. And I'm counting relatively few people in their 60s, mostly 50s, 40s, 30s, and 20s. And the occasional person in their 70s and one person in their 80s. And let's hear some more.
Talks about it being a Tibetan tradition. I just found myself wondering, were homeless people consulted in these flags being put up? Is that what their friends wanted? Perhaps so. I mean, I like it. But it's also an advertisement for the Homeless Lack of Services Center, great piety and so forth. We have actual people coming up to give a personal memorial, which probably means a lot more. But since you can't hear it, because this tape recording is at such a distance and on such a primitive equipment, you'll just have to take a few comments of mine instead.
And my apologies, because apparently this stuff was far more audible than I thought. But, hey, you live and learn. Never can tell about these acoustics. If you want to call in, you can, 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3. I'm talking about the Homeless Memorial Reading of the Dead, the names of the people who died last year, the memorial service that was held this morning out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center.
All right, we're talking with
Larry Bordeaux.
Larry, you're in a wheelchair. You got a cane, and you're outside. While we're listening to the, kind of peeking in and listening to the ceremonies inside, but you've got some good things to say about the Homeless Service Center.
I got nothing but good things about the homeless shelter.
Tell me about that.
Loft. I'm staying right here. I just got out of Corcoran Prison. 4 years halftime, 2 years. They brought me, I went home, the guy brought me right down here. They booked me up right on the spot. They took me in. They've been taking care of me ever since. Free food, housing, television, medication. It's a beautiful place, lots of friends, a lot of musicians. It's all good.
What do you do during the day when they close down at 10?
Walk around.
Or wheel around, is the case, maybe.
I had a wheelchair.
Right, fair enough. But, I mean, are disabled folks allowed to stay on the campus?
Only here.
You mean only... Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Are they allowed to stay between 10 and 3 during the day when usually...
Yes, sir. But there's also the armory. It's extra, free. You can't smoke there, but you can smoke here.
You can't be there during the day.
That's right.
Where do you go during the day? Are you allowed to be here during the day?
Yes, sir.
Because I know that some folks who aren't disabled, I guess, are not allowed to be here during the day.
They don't need to be here.
Okay.
They can take care of themselves. A lot of homeless people, that's all they want to do is get housed. They're going to get housed. They got a housing officer to help them out. Free. It's a great place. Charles runs this place. He's the best guy in the world. He'll help you out. He's taking me down to get my foot fixed. At the veterans. Free.
How are the vets treating you, the vet service?
The vets are famous. They're great people. My great-grandfather was a Confederate soldier. I was in the Navy, Vietnam, corpsman, medic.
And how are the vets services treating you now that you're no longer in the Navy?
They're still there. They're there forever.
Because I know there's a real backlog for a lot of vets.
I know. But to let me in.
I'm glad to hear it. Cool. How do the vet services compare with the homeless service center services?
They're probably better. Yeah. The veteran center, I mean the homeless shelter there, is a wonderful place.
Right.
I thank the good Lord for this place. I go to church. I read the Bible. I don't drink. A lot of people that do. That's okay. They can drink all.
No sexual activity on the campus.
Nope. Not yet.
Hey. Well, let's keep our fingers crossed. Right. We're talking with
Larry Bordeaux.
Thanks, Larry. And there's a story in today's San Francisco Chronicle, Veterans Die Waiting for Benefits. It's a front page story. It had a lot of interesting claims in it that I wanted to kind of run past you. After 7 months of delay, the Department of Veterans Affairs finally approved World War II veteran James Alderson's pension benefits last week, but that was too late for him because the 89-year-old veteran had died 3 months earlier in a Yuba City nursing home. The VA's inability to pay benefits to veterans before they die is increasingly common, according to data obtained by the Center for Investigative Reporting. The data reveal that tens of thousands of veterans are being approved for disability benefits. Hang in there while I struggle with this newspaper. And pensions only after it is too late for them. In the fiscal year that ended in September, the agency paid $437 million in retroactive benefits to the survivors of almost 20,000 veterans who died waiting. These figures represent a dramatic increase from 3 years earlier when the widows, parents, and children of fewer than 6,400 veterans were paid $7.9 million. So it's almost 50 times as much money going out and three times as many veteran survivors, widow parents and children of veterans, getting finally their veteran benefits. Ranks of survivors waiting have surged from fewer than 3,000 in December 2009 to 13,000 this month. Nationwide, 900,000 veterans and their families have been waiting 9 months for a decision. In October, the average wait for a veteran was almost 11 months in San Diego, 17 months in Oakland, and a year and a half in Los Angeles. Some advocates for veterans say the number of survivors being approved for retroactive payments represents merely a fraction of the veterans who die waiting. Many grieving families, they say, don't file paperwork with the agency to keep a claim from expiring. You're just so exhausted and drained with the grief of losing a loved one. It sometimes is hard just to wake up in the morning, let alone navigate a complicated bureaucracy, said Bonnie Carroll, founder of the nonprofit Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. There was a decision in November, more than a year after Vietnam vet John Conrad died of leukemia. The VA sent his widow a letter acknowledging that his cancer was caused by the exposure to the toxic defoliant Agent Orange. Was it 40 years later? 50 years later, I don't know, something like that. The decision marked a reversal for the agency, which had denied Conrad's claim for disability benefits for 3 years while the former Army specialist was still alive. The denials had come despite supporting medical opinions from a series of doctors, including the VA's own oncologist. By the time the VA reversed itself, the family home was in foreclosure. Linda Conrad, who had quit her job as a paralegal to care for her husband during his last days, found her efforts to secure a new job thwarted by the recession. VA officials say the agency's changing stance on Agent Orange claims is a major catalyst for the rise in posthumous payments. In 2010, Veterans Affairs Secretary Eric Shinseki issued a ruling granting benefits to 158,000 Vietnam vets who suffered from ischemic heart disease, Parkinson's disease, and two types of cancer, neither the kind of leukemia that killed John Conrad, that the agency previously had denied were caused by Agent Orange. And this was provoked by a federal court ruling in Northern California and was responsible for about half the payments in 2012. McLenichen, the VA pension director, attributed the threefold increase in the number of veterans who died awaiting disability and pension benefits to a 2008 law that streamlined the ability for survivors to petition the agency for compensation instead of forcing them to file a new claim. So he's blaming the people who are filing the claims. Some of these bureaucrats are really shameless. And there's more to the story. You can find it in the San Francisco Chronicle for today. It's probably online for those of you who are computer savvy or have access to computers. Again, call-in number here if you've experienced any of these problems, want to talk about people you've lost in the last year, particularly if they've been homeless, or have any updates on what's going on out there on these cold, cold nights and during the day. Give a call, 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Let's take a comedy break, however much of a clash that may seem with the subject matter tonight. Maybe it's a good clash.
I'm a private eye. My mother named me Hugh. My father named me Jim. Last name's Bissell. So my friends call me Huge Imbecile. This recession, it hit me hard. My career was not going great. My prospects were about as good as those of Muammar Gaddafi's publicist. I was feeling more ignored than Charlie Sheen's AA sponsor. But just then my phone rang. I'd been given an assignment. They wanted me to go down and investigate just what had happened with the miners down in Chile. The miners had been up out of the mines for a while now, and they were telling their stories. I hadn't seen that many miners in front of a microphone since the last Roman Polanski trial. Well, the first trick was to get myself a flight down to Chile. It was 1,100 hours. I had a date with destiny at 1,300 hours. Which left me only 200 hours to shower and shave. But when I got down there, my first job was to interview the rescue workers who'd been there with the miners when they came up out of the mine. What was it like to see dozens of people who hadn't showered in 69 days? Turns out it's a little bit like France. Then I needed to speak with the miners themselves. First man I talked with was the oldest one. He'd been down in that mine despite being able to retire for years and years. This man was, in a way, the Brett Favre of miners. Except without the creepy text messages. Then I found the miner who had both his wife and his mistress waiting for him. This miner was the last one to leave the mine at his own request. What was it like down there in the mine? One of the miners described it to me. He said it was hotter than the inside thighs of Rush Limbaugh's corduroys after a long walk. He showed me pictures. I hadn't seen that many sweaty, half-naked men in one room together since gym class in high school. And I was homeschooled. Well, now I knew I had all the information I needed. Still, I couldn't get past the idea that I'd never understand what it was like to be in cramped quarters, sweltering in heat with no food. Then I took a Southwest Airlines flight home, and I understood.
And now back to the homeless memorial today, and your phone calls, if you want to call in, 427-3772. I should say, if you've got a personal message for me or you want to get some information that it's not really readily discussable on the air, give a call to the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and leave me a message, and I'll deal with it there. And that's 423-4833, 423-HUFF. I'll be out on the street about 9 o'clock downtown checking out this Dance Your Frost Off happening in front of New Leaf Market, where there's going to be, I'm told, hot soup and, I don't know, some hot tunes and maybe some cold people trying to get warm and some warm hearts, perhaps. There's a lot of nasty shit going on the last year around the attacks on homeless people and demonizing them, cutbacks, destruction of homeless campsites, blaming homeless people for closed bathrooms that are really the function of, or should be the function of the government, the function of a community at least, if not the government. Anyway, let's hear some more of this, and maybe we'll hear from you, 427-3772. Again, think about stuff you want to share with the community. If you have a question for me, that's fine. I just got a call asking that I read the, I give the names of the dead to out, but of course I just did on the air and read them, and I'll be happy to do that again. If you want to get a copy of that list, get in touch with me at the Huffline, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Leave me a message there and leave me your email or a phone number where you can be reached. You can also contact the Homeless Persons Health Project. I don't have the phone number, but it is, I'm sure, online or in the book, if there is such a book that still exists, but certainly online. Homeless Persons Health Project, HPHP, they have it too. Thanks. Here's some more from today, earlier.
I'm Arkansas.
All right, man. And Mama Joy McCorkle is giving a memorial poem to a woman named Mary who died beating the premature 30 years death that usually, she describes, it happens to homeless people. She's a regular contributor to the homeless newspaper Street Spirit, Mama Joy is, and perhaps we can get her to read that poem later. And Becky Johnson's not going to be the first to share a story about someone lost this year.
Actually, McCorkle's poem was given out as a handout at the door of the Homeless Services Center's, or Lack of Services Center, memorial. And I'm going to read it here. It's a good poem. Mama Joy has been published frequently in, or at least certainly a number of times, in Street Spirit, which is a homeless newspaper that is sold in Santa Cruz. You can get copies of it downtown. Come to the Huff meeting on Wednesday. You can get a copy from me. It's at the library in case you want to hear it, or I should say read it. You're going to hear her poem right now. She writes, "Cause of Death. My shadow woman died this March, cause of death undetermined. She beat the odds. She didn't die 30 years prematurely like other homeless. She was but a very old 57. The coroner wasn't in a hurry to find the medical cause of death. No one was anxious for that information. But I knew what really killed Mary. It was 10 years of a homeless lifestyle. 10 years of fighting the elements without shelter, clothing, or food. Mary was a very private, independent, mentally ill woman who chose her voices over psychotropic medication. Mary knew her voices intimately, but didn't want to learn about her medicine's side effects. She listened to her voices and suffered the migraines they gave her without complaining. I never heard her complain. She never complained that her husband let her pack for a California vacation, coming from the Midwest in their new car. He drove her to 115 Coral Street, carefully unloaded her two suitcases, put Mary on the street, and drove away, never to return. Her belongings were gone the first week and her money soon afterward. She was terrified of homeless people, but accepted a place on the floor of a church for nightly shelter and welcomed the help of other mature women with whom she found herself. She would smoke a cigarette if offered one, but she never begged, and she had no money left. Mary earned the respect of the homeless community because she never begged, flew a sign, stole, or turned a trick, but still survived. Mary was not only the shadow woman. My public health nurse said his boss got a call from New York thinking I was writing about her mother, another abandoned spouse and mother. A mother who fed her child balanced, nutritious meals, but after 10 years of eating potato chips, pretzels, and Pepsi, forgot how to feed herself. She forgot how to use a stove, and without a refrigerator, she shared her humble room with cockroaches. Yes, my shadow woman died this March, cause of death unknown, only 21 years prematurely, unlike the other homeless who die 30 years prematurely. Joy Bright McCorkle, December 2012. The name of that poem is Cause of Death. So, let's hear some more.
And David Silva is also coming up.
David and I have to share another name that's not on this list. It's Billy R. Comer.
And Becky shares the name of Billy R. Comer, and you can't really hear her very well. Perhaps she'll talk about it independently afterward.
Billy was 34. He suffered from severe diabetes. And I believe he had a drug problem in the past as well. So he was homeless for about 6 months. He did get housing, and during a visit to his family back in Bakersfield, he fell ill and was hospitalized and did perish on May 15th of this year. He's 34 years old. He died of a stomach ulcer, and one of the things that he and his mother and Dave and I are proud of is that he had zero drugs in his system at the time of his death. He really had beaten the addiction and was on his way to a better life. He had enrolled in a program to upgrade his his schooling wasn't that great. And
David Silva speaks.
He was so talented. He knew the mayor of Santa Cruz. They went back to his family reunion where he died. He was so proud. I just want to say, especially thanks to Santa Cruz. The last 5 months of his life, he was the happiest person, and he had a very, very miserable, painful life. But thanks to Santa Cruz, even to the Santa Cruz Police Department, who gave us a ticket for taking the safest place we could find. But I just want to say that you people made him happy, and you gave him hope. For, you know, he probably would have gone back out to this eventually, you know, but he had hope, and he had a whole new life. Thanks to the people of Santa Cruz, there's something different here. And that's why I came home. I buried all my relatives. It's like endless 8 years of funerals. I came home after burying everybody, and I didn't expect to have to bury Billy, but he was happy. I want to thank you all.
No, he was... taken to the emergency room 28 times during that 6 months he was homeless, to underscore how difficult living on the streets is to go. Once he got back into housing, he was hospitalized only 3 times after that. So getting housing for people is so important. And some of these funds that got cut, maybe we need to restore them.
I must say, I was kind of shocked to see the figures when I come here to see that there's AIDS patients and cancer patients dying on those figures. We've got to get work in their books.
It's interesting, David Silva, who's lambasted authorities for cutting off funding that put him and Billy on the streets, is now thanking the community. It's depressing for me to hear that. Glitch.
Mike would always sit in the front row, always have something to say, always express himself. He was like the bastion of free speech in Santa Cruz. And I got to know him a little bit, and I was happy to always be able to see him there speaking his mind. He was a veteran, a proud veteran, a proud man. And I think that we all should remember him. I know the city council remembers him. I remember him. And Michael, we miss you.
I don't know whether Michael Tomasi was included in the list of...
He was. Again, I really find this, a little hypocritical isn't quite the word. Ironic isn't either. Steve Plaich did not have a lot of positive things to say about Michael Tomasi when he was alive. And I had very mixed opinions about Michael. I mean, I always felt that, he would always talk about being the king of marijuana. This is the guy who spoke at city council in oral communications regularly, like clockwork. But unfortunately, three-quarters of his speech was always the same. And it was self-promoting or self-describing as I'm the king of marijuana, and I love all of you, and so forth. But he would also include in his speeches specifics about concerns he had and experiences he'd had in the last week or month before that meeting. Some of which were very personal to him, like he was concerned that his vehicle had been taken by police, his dog suffered, either it was taken away or it was killed. Like many homeless people, he suffered, he ran into the razor's edge of the Santa Cruz Police Department, Parks and Rec, the bureaucracies here in Santa Cruz, the criminalize the poor machine that is now revving into high gear with the new city council coming into power. The old city council was probably just about as bad, but the new one reaffirms that anti-homeless stance, which is illustrated by the sleeping ban, illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz after 11 o'clock at night, even though there's shelter outside or in your vehicle, even if though there's shelter for less than 10% of the homeless community. And the same people that are in the audience, many, some of them anyway, the former mayor Don Lane, the chief of police Kevin Vogel, you hear me repeatedly groaning at their presence. Sergeant Flippo, I guess Lieutenant Flippo now, chewing gum off to the side in full uniform. And I mention he's chewing gum only because he's the only person in the room chewing gum. And I'm a person who believes in, I'm kind of a libertarian. I mean, I say, if you want to chew gum at a funeral, sure, go ahead. But it just so aptly characterized how the police really regard homeless people in terms of how they treat them, not necessarily in terms of how they feel about them. I think individual police officers can be very compassionate human beings and actually have can treat homeless people on instances in very compassionate ways. But they are paid activists in a system, or they're actively participants in a system that destroys people or is intended to drive them away, to make them feel like less than human, to treat them essentially like trash. One way or another, that they their needs are criminalized, whether it's going to the bathroom or sleeping, sitting downtown in a public space. And it's the most annoying and almost revolting. It angers me, really. It's hypocrisy to see these same officials who preside over this dehumanizing system hypocritically or self-deludedly proceed to mourn the death of the people where they created the conditions that are not only contributed to those deaths, but also will create more deaths in the next year. I mean, that's why, as I think you're going to hear me talk about later and I've spoken about before, homeless people themselves suggested to me that these ceremonies were really an insult to homeless people, that really, if they really were concerned about memorials, they would have memorials every month run by homeless people that talked about what could be done to stop this in the next month and the particular circumstances under which people died and what the responsibilities for different agencies for this kind of thing. But that isn't, of course, what's happening. This is a sort of a once-a-year media event. And it does give people who were friends of those who died an opportunity to say their piece. I mean, that's for sure.
I don't know, respectable or acknowledged homeless dead or those that they noticed. Now we have another woman speaking about how she got into housing after being in the, I guess it was the Paige Smith Community House, now has actual housing. She's pleased that she doesn't have to have the landlord knocking at her door, at least not at the moment. But the issue really is, why isn't Don Lane, who's sitting in the audience and others, championing rent control to stop the landlord from kicking people out of the housing that they're in? And there's no answer to that except lack of political courage or close connections with real estate people. I don't know what other answers. Mike Rutkin would tell you no, it's because it can't pass in Santa Cruz because it failed in 1982 rent control, or that the Copley decision, vacancy control, which passed in the 90s through landlord lobbying, makes rent control no longer a possibility. But in fact, there are renter protections in different cities that even passed since that bill passed the legislature. Of course, now you have democratically controlled legislature would conceivably reverse that, though I don't hear anything, any discussion of that on the horizon yet.
Not democratically controlled, Democratic Party controlled. Just to be real clear on that. They have complete control of the legislature. Two-thirds of the legislature is now Democratic. The governor is Democratic, meaning of the Democratic Party. And presumably, they could actually reverse the vacancy decontrol that essentially hobbled, if not killed, rent control in many places, although it still exists in various cities and could exist in Santa Cruz if there was the will. Or at least people like Don Lane, who claimed to be so concerned about the homeless, could advocate for it. Or Micah Posner, perhaps.
I keep noticing Sergeant Flippo in full uniform chewing gum in the back. He's the only person in the room chewing gum. And I'm a gum chewer myself at times, and I guess I feel that's kind of good speech. It's, what's the big deal? You know, I'd be people should feel free to chew gum if they want. But this guy's in full uniform. It just sort of symbolizes the attitude, because he was the downtown sergeant for quite a while and presided over sighting, harassing, ticketing of the kind of people who died here today, homeless people. So I'm looking at the handouts given to those of us who came in, the 14th Annual Homeless Memorial. I've got the names of the speakers, and there's a Santa Cruz County Annual Report on Homeless Deaths. But there's no mention of the names of these folks, even those who died this year, much less the names of those who are paraded about on flags outside. It's too bad. But anyway, I'm looking at them now.
I got to say that I spoke to Matt Nathanson and I guess someone else who was involved in gathering these names, and they explained, or one of them explained, that they didn't release the names on paper because they wanted to respect concerns about relatives who, I don't know, felt ashamed that these people died homeless, or I'm not quite clear actually what their rationale was, but they seem to have a genuine rationale, and frankly, I was really pleased, because within hours after I made the request, Matt or someone else, someone working with him, I think it was Matt Nathanson of the Homeless Persons Health Project, hope I have his last name right, if I don't, I apologize, sent me a listing of all the people who died this year, and I read that earlier, and of all the people who died since 1999, which I hope to pass on to those who want it. Sounds like we have a caller. We do. Hello, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, this is Hannah of Six Sad World.
I'm sorry, it is who?
I do Six Sad World at 11 p.m.
Okay, and again, tell me your name again.
Oh, Hannah?
Hey, Hannah, so welcome.
Hi, am I on air right now?
You are on the air, if that's where
okay,
you want
to
be.
I just need to talk to someone. I can just call back after.
Okay, if you'd like to talk to me, give a message to, let me give you a number to call. Have you got a pencil?
Okay, yeah.
It is 423-4833. That's the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line, 423-4833. Leave me a message. I won't be at that number until much later tonight. I will be downtown in front of New Leaf at 9 o'clock, where I understand they'll be serving hot soup and doing a dance-a-thon, so to speak.
Okay, I was going to talk to you about putting something on the radio, actually, later, but...
Unless you'd like to talk, you're welcome to talk about it on air if you'd like, too. You know, you have that
option. No, that's okay.
Okay, well, call back and let me know.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And the call-in line for on-air talk is 427-3772, 427-3772. It's open, in case you want to call in. And like that, here we go. Let's hear some more.
The homeless memorial ceremony ends with the lighting of candles. People are invited to come up and light a candle. So on this one day, people are invited to stay as long as they like, whereas every other day, Monday through Friday, homeless people who aren't disabled are essentially exited from the area between 10 and 3. Also missing from this list of flags is Robert Blind Bear Facer, who died this year in Monterey, although homeless in Santa Cruz for several years, where he was ticketed and became the inspiration for a peace camp which provided shelter that the Homeless Lack of Services Center could not for 1 month, and then to some extent for following that for several months for those who maintained under the police harassment directed by the very same Chief Vogel, who was here in full uniform. And not objected to by Mayor Don Lane, who was about to light a candle. Talking with
Judy Malone.
And this is your first memorial?
Yeah.
And here you're here, even with a broken leg.
Yeah, I am.
Glad you came. Anybody you remember you want to say anything about?
No.
Okay. Yeah. So I've asked, you're going to listen to the Pajaronian talk to Phil Kramer, who was asked directly.
We're making some more progress. But certainly today makes it even more poignant, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
The progress that the guy is talking about, Phil Kramer, is the 180-180 program, which, as I talked about earlier, is this attempt to provide housing first to the most vulnerable homeless, or at least the most annoyingly costly homeless, who are using hospital services so much.
and also visibly creating, frightening the horses downtown, as I would describe it. I asked Kramer you're hearing this interview, how many people he'd actually gotten into housing with this 180-180 program. He refused to say. And he claimed later this because he was in a mourning situation. Although this was after the ceremony was essentially, it become a sort of a series of people talking to each other in small groups. And you hear him instead engaging in promotional activity to the Pajaronian, but he's not willing to talk about specifics, at least not to me. Can draw your own conclusions.
Yeah, and even some of the statistic of the person that went to the emergency room 28 times or something in the new housing.
And so far, Phil is declining to say how many people actually have housing in the 180-180 program. I've asked him.
I'm just trying to be quiet right now, Robert, and just take a moment.
Okay. Yeah, that's nice. It's a really simple question, Phil. I'll hope you get back to me in the next week, cousin. If you don't, we'll assume that you're not really being candid about it right now.
We're talking with
Clay Leogard, nicknamed Stormy.
Clay, you remember some people who died and are remembered here today. Anything particular you want to say?
They didn't mention Skippy.
You mentioned him. Tell me about Skippy.
He was an alcoholic, but at 5 years old. He was here for the longest time I met him. July 23rd in 98, we were both homeless. Then he left here and moved to the Stangville. And he drank himself to death. He was found 2 weeks later. And you didn't mention Michaela either, Susan's daughter. She died a horrible, painful, lonely death.
Tell me about that if you wish.
And her fiancé got away with her murder when he should have went to prison for life. It's not fair. It's not fair at all. They rot in hell forever and ever. And then Pauline, she gave everything she had to people. She had put them in motels for weeks and months, spending her own money, buying food, clothes, shoes, and everything. And she died alone, out in the cold, for nothing. But people just used her and stole from her all the time and betrayed her.
Can you light
her candle for something? He didn't mention Glenn. Glenn was here July 23rd of 98 too. He served in Vietnam and he stepped on a landmine and blew off both his arms. And he had prosthesis with hooks. At Captain Hook.
He died this year?
No, a couple years ago.
You know there are flags outside with a lot of other earlier
names. Can I get copies of all?
I would like to do that too. You might talk to Monica Martinez.
And anyway, he got all his debts paid monthly, and he went to the park. What's that park? San Lorenzo Park. And this husband and wife came from out of town. I forgot from where. And they stabbed him, and they cut into his flesh and body, and they put bastard go to hell. And a word I can't mention because it's too bad.
Say anything you want.
He said, fuck you, bitch, to him. And they cut his heart out and pulled it out. Cut his stomach open, pulled everything out.
When did this happen?
I can't remember. It hurts too bad.
This was in Santa Cruz?
At San Lorenzo Park.
And the name of this guy was?
Daryl.
Last name?
He was called Glenn, too. Can't remember his last name, but he was so sweet.
How long have you been in Santa Cruz yourself?
Since December of 68.
You're an old timer.
I hate Santa Cruz. It's so wicked. Naval people are horrible here. They'll do anything to you and take your life. They don't care.
What do you think of all the officials standing up and making statements and so forth?
I think it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. They're heaven sent. They're special.
Are you homeless yourself?
Yes, I am.
And what do you do at night to sleep?
Well, my fiance and I were camping out under three trees at Harvey West. We got two tickets. We have to go to court, and we have to pay the fine.
How long ago did you get these tickets?
3 months ago.
Are you still camping out?
Well, I got, I'm dying of cancer and emphysema and heart disease, and I got a bleeding ulcer. I'm throwing up black blood instead of red blood. My white cells are down low, and I got malaria that I've had ever since I was a year old.
You're still standing, I notice.
And I have MRSA. They give me prednisone for a couple of days, and I got to stop it because of the steroids.
I hear you.
I'm a diabetic. I'm a diabetic 1, 2. I take Lantus Novolog, and I take Glucrise, and I take Metformin. My blood sugars are always low.
Are you in housing now, or are you outdoors?
No. I finally got housing in Santa Cruz. At that place, who's the Seuss up the street? I got a two-bedroom house. I got all my papers. Two-bedroom apartment.
How long did that take you?
2 weeks.
That's pretty good.
So, my fiance, Ralph and Pat II, been an alcoholic since he was 9 years old. His mom abused him, mainly tortured him.
Is he indoors as well now?
He's at the Santa Cruz Residential Care Facility for alcoholics and drug addicts.
We've been speaking with, thank you for talking to me, and we're going to play this on the radio tonight.
What time?
6 o'clock. I'll give you my card.
I don't have a radio to listen.
It'll be recorded on an audio file. You can always get to it. If you ever get to a computer, you can get to it.
Is there any way you can make me a copy and I'll pay?
You could try.
I don't know how to use a computer.
If you call me, we can talk about it. I'm not very talented at such things, but it's possible.
You are.
No, I'm not. No, I'm talented at little tape recorder shit. Not, you know.
I would like to have everything.
Call me up. That's what my number's on the card.
Phone number?
It'll be on the card.
You got to write your number down real big because I'm blind in my right eye.
I'll show you the card, see if you can see it. We've been talking with
Kalei Leagard, nicknamed Stormy.
Hey, Stormy. Thank you.
Thank you, too, honey.
All right, so we're talking with
Becky Johnson. I just wanted to give the annual total here of homeless deaths. We had 33 official deaths.
Official?
Three deaths that occurred where people had gotten housing but then still perished. So that's 36. And then there were 10 people who had perished outside of Santa Cruz County. So that's 46. And then two names that were not mentioned, Billy R. Comer and Robert Blind Bear Facer. So that's 48 deaths total.
And there may have been a couple others. We just, Stormy has some other names, but I'm not sure if they were from this year or not.
Right, but we have put all these numbers together, comes up with 48 homeless deaths connected to Santa Cruz County in some way this year. Not a very good record for Don Lane, who dedicated his mayorship to helping the lot of homeless people, where we had even more homeless deaths this year than last year, and a much larger percentage died outside rather than in some kind of hospital or facility. Two-thirds died out on the streets.
It would be interesting to know how many people who were evicted from the San Lorenzo campground died this year.
Yeah, I would like to know that as well, but there was quite a bit of talk about the Stag Hotel, which burned down last May in
Watsonville,
and that half of the people that became homeless because of that fire, and there was one death related to that homeless where the man was injured in the fire, became homeless, and then died of his injuries from that fire out on the streets.
You know, what I found annoying about this whole thing was, first of all, of course, the bureaucrat-heavy aspect of it. Secondly, the fact that there were some people like yourself and David who spoke of their personal relationship with people, which is really what a memorial is about. Although I didn't much like your kissing the ass of these cops and talking about, here, what 6 months ago you said exactly.
And I'm now referring to David Silva behind her. Behind Becky, she points out that it sounds like I'm talking about her, and I'm not. And it has to be said, though, and you're going to hear David and I kind of jousting about a bit, but clarifying what his feelings are on that.
The opposite, David.
I didn't kiss any cop's ass.
I'm talking about David, not you.
With your listeners.
About you, David. I'm looking at this evil David guy who has been a longtime advocate for homeless activists and also a longtime fighter against AIDS and supporter of needle exchange. I mean, you were indicting the Santa Cruz City Council and for cutting back services, but you had not a word to say about it here where it might have counted most, where people give a shit about people who are dying. How do you respond to that in my attack on you on this crucial moment?
Well, that was last century. This is this century.
I see. The man moves on. That's what we'll just have to leave it at that. I'm afraid that's why there'll be so many people dying in the next century.
Pardon? That's not the reason people are dying in the next century. Not because of me moving on. The problem is that if we dwell too much in the past, then we don't get things done. Yeah, it may seem like I was kissing cops' ass, but I said even the police. You know, and I included in my thank you for to Santa Cruz. I thank Santa Cruz for giving Billy the last 5 months of his life happy. And that was the only happiness he ever had for that length of period of time.
He might have had a much longer time, too, if you guys hadn't been harassed to death or harassed significantly in that period.
It wasn't for Camp Occupy. We would have died out here.
Nobody mentioned that at all, as far as I know.
I wanted to, and I went blank. I'm really kicking myself.
You know,
no sound.
But I appreciate your candor on this.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Occupy Santa Cruz supported a campground which housed more people by a factor of four than the Homeless Lack of Service Center did at the time. And yet the same people, the same police officers who piously were lowering their heads at this ceremony, or obliviously chewing gum, as the case may be, were instrumental in the destruction of this campground on December 8th last year, with no provision made for the people that were sent into the wilderness, and no provision made to store the property of people, most of which was thrown away. And that still seems to be the case, in spite of claims that that's not the case. Although, maybe it's changing. I have yet to be persuaded that that's actually the case.
And afterward, I spoke with three people in the offices of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which I may have to start calling the Homeless Services Center again, because I got such a rosy picture from the three of them. That was a woman named Chris, a guy named Jeffrey, and Shelley McKittrick, the program director, all of whom claimed that they would give out letters to those who got camping tickets but weren't on the waiting list if the shelter was full the night they got the ticket, or they would give out the receipts for those who are on the waiting list and request one. So they claim that's the policy, and that's it's good news.
And regular listeners know what I'm talking about, but in Santa Cruz there's a law that makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night. And police, particularly for the last 6 months, have been rather abusively and harshly ticketing and harassing people under this law, perhaps to pander to certain fascistic elements and NIMBY-esque and xenophobic elements in the community that blame homeless people for feces, needles, trash, violence, crime, murder, you name it. They've got scaring the children, etc., etc. And I even lose my way in my sense of, throwing up my arms at this. The Homeless Lack of Services Center for years has been ducking, essentially making an honest statement that we don't have shelter for any more than 5 or 10%. And therefore, they should be bringing this to the court's attention so that any tickets that reach court will be thrown out under the so-called necessity defense. And even before court, thrown out by the city attorney under a law passed 2 years ago that says if you're on the waiting list, tickets will be thrown out. That apparently, or allegedly, is being done. But they're not giving people evidence that they are on this waiting list so that they can short-circuit the process when police show up by saying, look, I'm on the waiting list. Leave me alone. What I heard today, and you'll probably hear me repeating this, is that they will give people this documentation.
That's true. I also spoke with a woman who had been here for 2 weeks who said she got a ticket to go back to someplace in the Midwest, I think, Michigan, something like that. And she took her 3 days to get it. She came out here with, I guess, the promise of a job, or she was looking for work, and now she found she didn't have it. She's homeless. She looked still pretty much together. Clothing was clean and fashionable. I don't know. And she was sitting in the offices of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. When I asked Jeffrey why they weren't open during the day, he speculated that perhaps because they wanted to clean things up, or they didn't have the facilities, that they took care of disabled people anyway who could stay during the day. I didn't ask about the list of disabled rules. And
this has been a sore point with people like John Colby and homeless folks who have been disabled and who have claimed to have suffered discrimination out at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. And when Don Lane was confronted with this publicly, he first resisted any response. Finally, he did appear on a radio show, our television show, with John Colby, but did not come back for a follow-up discussion. Why aren't there rules posted that clarify if there are problems, what people can do to appeal decisions by authorities there that exclude them or exit them, as is said? We've talked about this at some length on the air. I do have a suggestion for people who are getting on the waiting list and hope, and also while you're on the waiting list, of course, you can't. While you're on the waiting list, you're not able to. You're not indoors usually, although in the winter there is the Armory Winter Shelter, which has up to 100 spaces. And I'm told it hasn't been. I told contradictory things. First, it's been full, then it hasn't been full. They cram more people in. But there obviously isn't enough for the 1,500 people outside. If people want to avoid tickets, I suggest they go to the Homeless Lack of Services Center and make an application to get on the waiting list and then ask for a stamped, dated copy of the waiting list application they filled out, indicating that their application is there and that they're on the waiting list. Although, I'm not sure that an application would constitute proof of being on the waiting list, which is what we've always looked for, so that people can, when the police come to demand in the middle of the night that you move or get a ticket and get a ticket anyway, even if you do move, that they show them this and say, you're still going to give me a citation, that they consider this might be the basis subsequently for a lawsuit against the police department and the city for essentially criminalizing people at night and subjecting them to cruel and unusual punishment both under the state and federal constitutions. And essentially ignoring their own ordinance, which states people shall not be subject to the sleeping ban if they're on the waiting list of these, it's either the River Street Shelter or the Homeless Service Center's Pauley Loft. Anyway, that's something that I continue to press for, however pathetic a solution it is, because I think it provides some kind of clarity, at least for those of us who are watching, and well as potential kind of fight back quality. Obviously, what's needed is far more, but you work with the scraps you have. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse. Name of the show is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. And we're going to go probably till about 8 o'clock tonight. You've been listening to Homeless Service Center Memorial Day interviews. Call-in number here is 427-3772. Call-in number off the air is 423-HUFF. We are panhandling for funds, equipment, assistance of any kind. You can go to our website for more information, freakradio.org. You can also find a way to access the stream at freakradio.org. Go to there and click on the red dot in the middle of the antenna. Or go to the Huff website and you'll find the way to go online to catch the stream for Free Radio. If you go to the name of the show, Bathrobes, Pierre's, Broadsides, and you'll click on the website address there for Free Radio, which is a long address, beginning of the words http://tunein, and there's more, much more. So, call in if you'd like. 427-3772 is the number. Here's a few more remarks about today, and then I'm going to go back a bit to a few other items that have been, well, left unattended. You know, it could be that on the actual site there is less problem than appears to be the case formally when you make requests about their procedures as written down, and that we'll have to look at.
Jonathan.
We're talking with
Jonathan.
Jonathan, we're here at the Red Church. It's getting near 6 o'clock on a Monday, the 26th of November. You have a question.
I was just wondering around the red zones, you know, it's like, are the police allowed to park? Because anybody else would get a ticket, but are the police allowed to park there, go across the street, go get a cup of coffee, come back in the car, and take off? So with the red zones, like I was saying, are they allowed to park there, basically? I don't even know.
You get a ticket, but they get to get a cup of coffee.
But
you know what gets them out of that? The loophole of a emergency vehicle.
An emergency cup of coffee. They need that coffee, man. And the donuts. They need the donuts.
Because they're chasing all the people they can't catch, but they never seem to catch. They're chasing them all around in circles, and they are poor people. And while they're doing that, they're pulling over the ones, and you'll notice people when you get pulled over in your brand new Nissan and your brand new cars coming into our town. Santa Cruz, we love people from out of town, when you visit here, you might get.
And we've been talking with.
If you've got a nice.
And call, again, your name is.
My name is. Try to spell that.
All righty, and you wanted to finish up.
No, thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you, man. Well, we're here at the corner of Lincoln and Cedar with
Freedom.
And Freedom, you're free as, well, one might expect pretty free. You're doing a kind of a cop watching on the streets. I know we were doing a little bit of that yesterday, walking up and down Pacific Avenue. And I got lost in the crowd. Did you find anything that happened after I left?
Not that night. No, I also kind of disappeared from...
You faded from view.
The avenue, correct. I was feeling a little ill yesterday. But I did, however, meet someone today who said that their dog got shot by by an officer in Oakland, actually.
Oakland, wow.
Yeah.
Not of my jurisdiction, but still.
Yeah, correct. I also have no idea what happened to cause that. I have no details on
anything
that.
Anything coming up for the next week as far as events go you want to point out?
Oh, yeah. Saturday, the December 1st, we have Food Not Bombs at Laurel.
And actually, Food Not Bombs this week is going to be Saturday as well. I spoke to Jane of Food Not Bombs a couple days ago. I think it was yesterday, maybe. And it's going to be at the post office, as I understand it, at 4 o'clock on Saturday the, what is today, is the 20th, 21st, 22nd, I guess it is, then 22nd. So check it out. That vegan food, friendly people, with a political purpose that talks of, that looks toward decriminalizing poor and homeless people outside. And I think this one, I am not positive, but this really sounds a little familiar to me. So I'm going to move to something else in the hopes that I can really play something that we haven't heard before. Let's take a brief break, and I'll be right back.
I always start the day out right by doing something swell. I log on to my favorite site. That's when I LOL. I know before the next day ends, I'll have 3,962 friends without leaving my place. I've grown accustomed to my Facebook. It always makes my day begin. Oh, look, my distant cousin Sue has tried a new shampoo. I'll post a joke, I'll send a poke. It's second nature to me now to take care of my Farmville cow. I'm very grateful to see pictures of your favorite childhood bike. Won't you check my status and click on that thumbs up like? Now on your homepage I can see you have more friends than me. I must pick up my pace. I'll send 100 friend requests to every boyfriend, every ex. A Yeovil town of plan of cheese, I'm now a fan. Real people now seem strange somehow. I find it hard to understand the three-dimensional shape man. I'm very grateful when someone accepts my friend request. So what? I guess I must admit that I've become a Facebook slut. So now I'll have to slow my pace and go to an unknown place. I'm going back to join my space.
Yeah, that was another one from Desperate House Members, Capital Steps. I've grown accustomed to my Facebook. So, here's some interviews from the Red Church. We're talking, I think, Monday before last, because last Monday I was hanging around the Public Safety Committee, as I mentioned earlier, the group that is apparently, well, I think it's siphoning off public indignation at feces and needles and some hysterical reactions to homeless people sleeping in the community, in the bushes. But not addressing issues that is producing a lot of public anger and some public positive response with the clean team cleaning up stuff and making it clear that they don't favor stigmatizing and criminalizing addicts and or homeless people who are outside and, quote, illegally camping, since every bit of camping for those outside in the city of Santa Cruz is illegal unless you're on private property in a backyard side yard, unless you're not visible from the street, which is nice if you can get it, but it's not possible for the majority of homeless people. At least that's my understanding. Here's an interview with a guy, Rick Stipes, who actually recently appeared in court on this ticket. I'm going to talk about that after we hear his interview. It's actually kind of a serious situation, but well, let's let the interview speak.
With
Rick.
And Rick, I know I talked to you a couple months ago because you were trying to get the police to return a lot of your property, which had been taken, what, up in the, is it the tracks or the Poganip?
Correct.
And I know that you itemized your property for us, and you spoke to Steve Plaich, and but then you decided it was not something you wanted to do.
That's correct, because if I try to retrieve my stuff, they'll try to lie and say they didn't do it, they didn't take it, or it'll be a waste of time. So I gave it up.
Then one read in the paper that you were arrested for what they called, did they call it indecent exposure? What do they call it in the...
Well, according to the ticket, it says indecent exposure, but...
What you were trying to do was...
But the witness said, saying I was...
Changing your clothes?
No, he was saying that I was...
Masturbating?
Yeah.
But that wasn't true?
It wasn't true.
Not that there's anything wrong with masturbating, mind you, but what...
That's supposed to be done in a closed area.
For homeless people, it's a difficult matter, though, because how are you going to find a closed area? I guess you... Where would this, did this alleged crime take place?
It's over by Depot Park in the apartment complex.
And were you in an enclosed area?
I was behind the dumpster trying to change my clothes.
And what happened then?
I was arrested, but cited.
Who approached you? A civilian? A cop?
A civilian.
And what did that person say?
Did I have to leave? It was a private property. So I cooperated, packed up my stuff, and left.
Then what happened?
And I was stopped by the police.
And how many police officers stopped you?
Two.
What did they say to you?
They said I'm under arrest, and... read my rights and asked me, do you have anything to say to me?
And what did you say?
There's nothing to say.
Okay, and what did they do then?
They put their cuffs on me, sat me down, and they wrote a ticket.
And then?
I wasn't really free to go, but I had to go to court, but I missed it.
And
anything working yet?
Were you jailed for this?
No.
You were just cited.
I was cited because the officer said, "Well, they're going to release them anyways to about 4 hours."
And did you tell the officer that you were just changing clothes?
No.
And. Is there a warrant out for your arrest?
If there was, I would be in jail.
Have police stopped you since?
They kept stopping me. And they kept giving me tickets after that.
What kind of tickets did you get?
I had one panhandling after dark.
What were you doing after dark? You were shaking it down and shaking a person, demanding if they give you all their change?
No.
What were you doing?
I had a sign.
What did the sign say?
Anything helps.
So they gave you a ticket to try to help you out?
Yeah.
Way out.
Well, basically, they're trying to stop us from trying to make ends meet.
And on that ticket, were any of these tickets, were you jailed or just simply cited?
So I'm excited.
Now, after the when did that Panhandling ticket, was that given to you?
Oh, that was like 2 days after my court date was supposed to appear.
For the indecent exposure.
Yeah.
And any subsequent tickets?
Huh?
Anything after that?
I think I had three after that.
What other kind of tickets did you get?
I can't remember. Which I'm not trying to focus on that.
I understand. So it wasn't
because of negativity.
So was it anything for sleeping ever or not?
I've been trying to be careful on that. Trying to wake up early, you know, or try to go somewhere where I could be hid, mm-hmm. where the cops won't know, where there's no first alarm sticker.
Now, so for example, for the last few weeks, have you gotten any tickets?
I can't remember on that one, but there was one that was falsely accused by the police, saying I was drunk in public and I didn't drink.
Name of the officer who accused you? Do you remember?
No, I don't.
Remember where it happened?
It happened right inside the bathroom of the Depot Park.
Have you left the Depot Park area? I mean, it sounds like they may be trying to say, move you out of there.
I don't know. He didn't say anything about that.
And you continue to be, you don't feel discouraged from going there?
No. Because that park, any park is a free park. Anybody can go there. As long as you don't do anything wrong over there.
True enough. But it's illegal to be there after dark. It's illegal to have a sign after dark anywhere in the city. It's illegal to sleep after 11. So there's a lot of things you can, unfortunately, run afoul of.
Between 11 to 8 in the morning.
8:30, yeah.
Well, on the paper it says 8.
And the code says 8:30. But in any case, thank you. We've been talking with
Rick.
Thank you, Rick. We're talking with someone who doesn't want to be named, but...
And before we get into that anonymous interview, I want to note that at the last Huff meeting, several people went to the arraignment of Brent Adams, Big Drum Brent, as I call him, organizer for Occupy Santa Cruz, video journalist, and a Santa Cruz 11 victim, an individual who's been charged with two felonies and two misdemeanors, as I and others have, for essentially being inside the building at 75 River Street. That happened about a year ago, well, a year and a month ago. In the dead of winter, there was an attempt to establish a community center in a building that the predatory lender Wells Fargo had kept vacant for 3.5 years and is still vacant, low these many months. We go back to court on July 7th. But anyway, Brent had a had an incident where he was trying to keep an eye on someone who was being harassed by the police. He was squatting nearby, leaning against a wall, and the police gave him a ticket for sitting. And he went to court to get his arraignment, and that was his arraignment was on the 19th. I guess that was yesterday. And he has a court date coming up in January in front of, I think it's either Judge Simons or Judge Connolly. Simons took the calendar yesterday, but she doesn't normally hear that kind of stuff. I think it's normally Department 1 or Department 2. Judge Connolly is in Department 1. Judge Gallagher is in Department 2. Anyway, Brent and others who were at the Huff meeting, a couple that was observing the proceedings, noted that Rick Stipes was in chains in custody. So apparently the warrant for not appearing at the indecent exposure arraignment ticket may have caught up with him. He, they mentioned, wanted to defend himself and didn't want a public defender. The judge was pressing him not to do that and pressing him rather hard. I don't quite know what the outcome of that was. I'll have to review my notes perhaps before the next broadcast, which I have on Sunday morning, for those of you who want to follow this kind of stuff, Sunday morning at 9:30. But Rick was in jail as of yesterday, and apparently he's in jail on bail, which means that he isn't getting out until trial. So he's one of the many who is now being housed at a government expense, at rather, for, he would say, changing his clothes. He initially told me, I think it was behind a dumpster, but in an enclosed area that he tried to find nearby, and he was spotted by vigilant eyes. I don't know. You know, I wasn't there, and we only have his account, but, well, you can hear where my sympathies are, and I don't want to be counterfactual. I want us all to know what the truth of the situation is for this kind of situation, but people outside who take off their clothes, it suddenly becomes illegal. Though it shouldn't be. It's actually not illegal to be naked. It's illegal to be naked and sexual in any way. That's the crime. Sick as that may sound in our society. But for homeless people, it's who are demonized to begin with, the idea of a naked homeless person, I guess, is a real terror. Let's hear some more interviews from, I guess it was December 11th or thereabouts at the Red Church. Might have been a little earlier.
You have some thoughts.
On Front Street, where they crushed the glass in the alley, they were hitting kids over the head with bottles.
Who is they?
The people that owned it or people who were working for that place over there.
What place would that be?
The glass place. That's all I know. It's in the alley.
And where's the near cross street? Because I'm not quite clear where that is.
Well, you know where the garage is on Front Street.
Front and Soquel.
Yeah.
In Front and Soquel?
Yeah. Well, over from that, you see the coffee roasting company in the back there with the tunnel.
I got you.
Go to your left past Jezebel's clothing store.
Okay.
And that alley is right there.
And so you noticed somebody getting hit with bottles there?
Yes, a little girl, was like about 3 years old.
Yeah.
And they've also had some shootings. One of my grandkids was shot.
How long ago was this incident with
this
the bottles?
This was about February, March, maybe.
Last year, earlier this year.
Yeah. Yeah.
About 9 or 10 months ago.
Yeah.
Or 11 months ago.
So. One night, I did see my granddaughter. Somebody tried to grab her at the corner of Soquel and Front Street. And I seen her running. And I found some, what do you call them? Needles?
How many needles did you see?
Needles. I found two. Called the police. They came to pick them up.
Right. This is on Front Street? Or?
In the alley there where the garage is, yes.
And when was this?
That was about February or March, I'd say.
And you live downtown?
Yes, I do.
And you're housed, but
you
spend some time downtown.
But I can see right down in the alley, and when I seen that little girl, they hit her in the back of the head, knocked her out.
Who was doing the hitting, do you know?
I don't know. The people that were employed at that place.
And how do you know she was 3 years old?
She looked about 3 years old. She wore a little pink hat. And she looked really cute. They threw her in a recycling bin.
Wow. What was your? Did you call the police?
I reported it. Of course, you know, some people that I was talking to, not the police, actually, but they thought I was kind of off the wall.
It sounds off the wall, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. But I got pictures of one when I went down to get her. It was a blue dumpster kind of thing for recycling, and somebody had moved her.
I see.
Yeah, because one of my neighbors was down there about that time, and I said, "Are you looking for that little girl that got hurt?" And he just kept digging and looking.
So did you talk? Is this neighbor willing to talk to the police about the issue?
I have no idea. I don't know. I do know that I went out one night. I got beat up pretty bad. I got pictures of that on my cell phone. And do you know, I found an arm and a leg of a human.
And where did you find those?
Yeah.
Where?
That was around either the glass place or across the street from there in Trader Joe's.
Was there nearby or was it dry?
No, there was blood.
And what time of day, when was this?
I must have been around 7:30 at night.
What month was it?
That was about June or July, approximately. And then, where those red gate doors are, on French Street, some guy was back there in a camouflage uniform, and he cut a girl's head off and threw it up in the air.
Now, you saw this guy cut the girl's head off?
Yeah, I was going to CVS, and he threw her head up in the air. They had her crowd up with a blue tarp. I don't know how they disposed of her.
Sounds unbelievable, but, you know, that's your testimony.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I'll swear to God on a Bible if I have to go into court.
Okay. But right now you want to remain anonymous.
Yeah. Well, not only that. They had somebody up on the sixth floor of the Palomar. They knocked her out. They put her in a net, and they brought her down to around the third, fourth floor.
And how do you know this?
It stopped right in front of my window. They had her in a net.
Okay.
That actually happened because I got told not to say.
And when did that happen?
Huh?
When did that happen?
It happened around June, July, August.
Okay. Well, thank you for these reports. You know, you really have to see this with your own eyes to believe it, I'm afraid. But, you know, here it is on tape.
There it is. I also had a picture of my window, but I guess they had her in a helicopter or whatever and took her. I don't know.
You better get a camera. Keep your camera with you in the future.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, you know, other people seen it. They kept walking by on the opposite side of the street from where the garage is, and they kept looking up.
Well, thank you. I got to go to this guy now, but thank you very much.
Yeah, let them tell me I'm bipolar or schizo.
Thank you, babe.
Because I won't deal with it.
And, of course, I don't know whether I put that in for thoroughness, comic relief, or the gore factor. Actually, it was because she really wanted to make a report. And I don't believe it, of course. There's all kinds of reasons I don't believe it. But you heard it here. This was Monday a week ago. It was also the same Monday when the media showed up to get some samplings of opinion on the homeless Bill of Rights, which Tom Ammiano, an assemblyman, has presented to the assembly, sort of in taking a page from the Rhode Island homeless Bill of Rights. And media wanted to talk to some folks, so I came down and found some folks that were interested in talking to them, and that hopefully will come up before we're too much later. We're hitting on 8 o'clock. You're tuning to the end of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, which has the occasional lurid tales, which sound like fiction rather than truth, but you can be the judge.
Yeah, KSBW is now interviewing.
I think that it doesn't necessarily need to be a homeless Bill of Rights, though, because all people are created equal, and I think the segregation that we're having in the community is actually causing a huge problem.
Okay. What are some, I mean, could you talk about, I mean, are those, is finding, like, a good place to sleep, is that a big issue in this community? Is finding, you know, a place to use the bathroom, is that a big issue in this community?
Absolutely.
Okay, and I guess could you talk about just the problems that people have with those?
Well, basically it's illegal to sleep due to 647E lodging, which the law is extremely vague. Anybody can be found guilty of it at any time. And it literally includes sitting or sleeping, the laying down of bedding, camping or not camping, cooking or not cooking, on public or private property. So it is so vague that anybody can be found guilty of it, and it is illegal to sleep, and that causes an issue because people have the fundamental right. It is a necessity to sleep, and therefore it just causes extreme turmoil in the community and in general for individuals.
So what happens when people do need to sleep but don't really have a great spot to do it?
They suffer a lot of problems. There's sleep deprivation, and people have a wide variety of ways
dealing with that, or sleeping in the day, you know. There's, yeah, lots of ways to cope with that.
What about the restrooms? Do people in this community, I mean, at nighttime, have a hard time finding a restroom to use?
Yes, also the restrooms, because public restrooms are only accessible until a certain hour, usually until about dark, and then you're shit out of luck.
Okay, so what do people end up doing?
I'm not sure. I mean, a lot of people probably have friends or use facilities at different companies, but, you know, it's kind of an individual thing that you got to figure out when you're in need.
Okay. Do you feel like the city is adequately addressing homeless issues?
Absolutely not. I think they're pushing away homeless people. There is a ridiculous amount of laws that discriminate against houseless people and continuously get them to move. Every hour there's actually harassment by police officers if you're sitting in the same location for an hour or more. And it's not sustainable. We need to be able to gather, to sit and not be pushed on.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
We're
talking with...
Oh, the notorious Mrs. V again.
And Mrs. B, what would it be for us? V.
V?
As in victory?
As in, yeah.
Okay. I thought it was B as in boop, boop, ba-doo.
Yeah, but now I'm a widow.
You're widow.
Boo-hoo.
Boo-hoo, okay.
Wah.
Let me talk to you in a moment because I
noticed that it's set up so that when the boys come out of jail and the girls is the same, it's come in by a certain time, get up at a certain time, stand in line for your food. There is no time to come up and out of the crab bucket because everybody's so focused on survival mode, which is getting what they need for today. And that's how the system's set up. I needed to be at River Street and do my work release and do my visits with my kids, but the hour restrictions wouldn't allow me to stay at the loft because I couldn't guarantee that I would be in on time, that I could do the hours a week because I had visits with my kids and commitments to CPS and also a job. So therefore, I wasn't allowed services as one of the people who are coming, trying to come up and out of this, right? If you're willing to conform, you can go ahead and stay in the system, but where is there really any movement for growth if you're spending your entire day making sure you check in on time, making sure you're at lunch on time, making sure you're at dinner on time?
Thank you, Mrs. V.
I'll add to that and also what the lady was saying on camera. Basically, what they've done here is they've created a circumstance where a displaced worker or person from this town can't lead a normal life. It's a form of psychological warfare. To be legal, you got to stay up all night. If you want to stay at the shelter, how the hell are you going to hold a normal job if you got to be ready to line up for services at 4 in the afternoon to go to a shelter that's basically a disgusting place to stay anyway? There's a lot of working homeless people around here, and to a great extent they sleep out at night because the shelter doesn't provide anything for them. If you want to stay at their paid for housing, you got to give them $300 of your very part-time money, which was as much as I was making in a month a few years ago, and I would have had to give it all to them to stay at the shelter. Or you can get a check from the government. They'll be glad to take the government money on the front end and the back end, but they're milking this. The poverty pimps are at work, and they've created an untenable circumstance for everybody but themselves, along with the city. The commercial property owners in this town are raking it in. Everybody else is suffering. It's time for that to stop.
Thank you, Lee. Vulnerable to, you know, things like police attacks. I've heard people describe being, you know, attacked by police and, you know, having other homeless people with.
This is Tom being interviewed by KSBW. Again, part of the team that came out Monday before last to ask about the homeless Bill of Rights.
Is it, but, you know, just not having the clout to really pursue it. So I think that those are all problems.
Okay.
Do you think this would help, though, or in a way, do you feel like not really?
I feel like it's a step in the right direction, so it does help to have a homeless bill of rights, but I think that, ultimately it has to do with deeper issues around, access to health, access to education, housing, and just, people being more mindful of the value of human life, or society being more mindful of the value of human life.
Okay. I think we got what we needed. Thank you.
So we have a plan here proposed by...
I was considering the possibility that...
You don't want to say who you are, anonymous?
My name is Hector.
Go ahead, Hector. You have a proposal. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was thinking that perhaps the homeless program should employ exclusively homeless people, train them and educate them, and I think that there would be more honest as to a day's work instead of paying people that are already qualified for other employments in society.
I think it's a good idea as far as I'm concerned. I agree. But we can't really trust these homeless people, really. They're grubby and stinky and smelly, and they use drug abuse.
They're
bums.
Domestic animals.
They're wild. They're crazy and wild. Talking with... if you want to say
Boston Mike.
Go ahead, Boston Mike.
If you're an alcoholic or a drug addict, there are programs you can get into.
Theoretically, but not many of them, though.
Well,
huge waiting lists.
Right, but if you're just crippled, you're screwed.
And that's a good point.
You're left, you're disabled, you can't buy yourself, and it's just horrible.
Have you had that experience yourself or with someone you know?
Well, yeah, I got tickets, sorry there's a housing shortage, sorry the economy turned down 2008, but they took away $240 roughly from everyone on SSI, and that's the difference between being endorsed. My name disappears. My name disappears off of housing lists. Okay, so I was counting on that, and when they took it away, it took away any hopes of getting get off the streets. And these tickets they got, they're like $350.
Yeah, and more.
Yeah, I mean, how much they want to, they're just making criminals out of people.
Can you bring them in for him, please?
And if you try to get a housing, they'll hold it.
We've been talking with
Boston Mike.
Thank you, Boston Mike.
Standby.
Rick here has been a successful healer. Rick, you're a testament to Rick's healing ability. What's your name?
My name's Julie Shaw.
And Julie, you have a family that you're in a vehicle with the permission of a church. You're able to sleep overnight.
That's correct.
But you're a little bit concerned because you have to leave the property at 7:30, and then you're on the street and you don't want to be asleep between 7:30 and 8:30 because
that would be illegal. We'll be awake.
But your eyes, you said it was a successful prayer healing from our man Rick here.
That's right. Rick, I told him that I was experiencing macular degeneration in one of my eyes, and he prayed for me, and my eyes got better immediately. It was in front of Walgreens one evening after supper. Thank you, Rick. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
Rick, is this something you do for a lot of folks, or just it just happened on this one occasion?
No. It has happened on many occasions, and also I've done long-distance healing. And when that happened, my stepdad told me that after the prayer was finished, he goes, "You know what you are?" I go, "What?" "You're a prophet."
A prophet without honor and without a lot of money in his own land.
And also without liberty. This is Rick, sounds like Rick Stipes, who is now in jail for, some say indecent exposure, some say just plain exposure. Plus, panhandling after dark with a sign, anything helps, of course.
He has none.
Basically, I do try to get by.
We've been talking with
Julie Shaw
and Rick. Thank you. And listening are
Jaden Shaw
and
Jordan Shaw.
Thank you both, and thank all of you. We're talking with
Ralph.
And Ralph, you say that you eat at Cafe Gratitude, and prices are Well, when usual restaurant prices?
No, they're actually above what I call affordable.
So they're kind of expensive?
Yeah, slightly, somewhat.
You used to have a penny, a bowl, sort of the gratitude meal, Cafe Gratitude?
Yes, that's correct. Whatever you can afford to give for the up to $7 is the
And what, max. What happened to that?
It was discontinued on November 7th.
Because?
They couldn't fund it. The funding wasn't there for it, is what they told me.
So no longer can you eat there for free or for a very low price?
No, sir. Not anymore.
Bummer. Well, but you said you've done that on a number of occasions?
Yes, I have. In fact, I've done it almost several times a week at one point when I didn't have an EBT card. And so I had, you know, either beg on the street or go to Cafe Gratitude and get a ball.
Interesting. We've been talking with
Ralph.
Thank you, Ralph.
All right.
So it is around 7, a little bit after. On Tuesday, the 11th of December, and it's the last city council meeting of the year, the evening coronation of the new mayor, presumably Hillary Bryant, and